Great. Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you very much for joining us today. Very pleased to see you all here. This morning, we're going to take you through our half-year results, and I'll also give you an update on how we're progressing with our strategy. But before we start, I'd like to introduce Ryan Mangold, our new CFO, who's up with me at the table today, and also David Martin, who many of you know, our new chairman, who became chairman a couple of months ago, and he's here in the audience. So to the headlines, our clear divisional strategies continue to deliver in line with our expectations, with all divisions generating like-for-like revenue growth. Student had a strong bid season, bolstered by continued above-inflation pricing and more bolt-on acquisitions. And Transit is winning additional business in the more exciting areas of the mobility market, and is progressing with innovation trials. First Bus delivered revenue growth and is poised to deliver further cost savings in H2, and Rail generated £49 million of profit, driven by Great Western Railway and the IFRS 16 changes. And the division's bolstered by the new West Coast partnership win that was won back in August. We have experienced challenges, particularly in respect to further hardening of the North American insurance market and legal environment, as well as the need to take a non-cash write-down on Greyhound book value. But in the context of fewer school days and students and worse weather during the summer impacting First Bus this year, I can see that the business is continuing to move forward. Cash generation and leverage levels pre-IFRS 16 are also in line with our expectations. At our full-year results in May, I announced a new strategy for the business, which focuses on portfolio rationalization. And we've made good progress with the strategy, and I'll update you on that at the end of the deck. But before we get into all of that, Ryan will take us through the financial results.
Thank you, Matthew, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Having joined the group just over 5 months ago, I'm pleased to be on board with the execution of the strategic plan announced in May, including the sale of Greyhound and the separation of UK Bus. A lot of good progress has been made in the period against these strategic initiatives, where solutions have been identified to reduce potential barriers, and progress has been made in the execution that Matthew will update later in the presentation. In the appendix, the presentation includes further analysis at a divisional level, and given the large number of key items in the half year to discuss, let's move on to the financial review. Turning to the financial summary, as a reminder, the first half year is seasonally low period of trading in the group, given the school holidays and university holidays impacting our student and bus business respectively. The implementations of changes to the accounting standards of IFRS 16 applied from the 1st of April 2019 has had a material impact on the presentation of the results, and this will be discussed in the following slides. Furthermore, updates to the key judgments in the period relating to the Greyhound carrying value and the North American insurance reserve have resulted in an additional impairment and increase in insurance reserves being recognized in the period. IFRS 16 adoption has resulted in an additional adjusted net charge to the profit before tax level of £7.3 million in the period, resulting in a 31.7% lower adjusted profit before tax of £28.7 million. Excluding the impact of IFRS 16, cash and gross debt before ring-fenced cash at the half-year is in line with our expectations. On slide 5, the implementation of IFRS 16 and the resulting recognition of right-of-use assets has had a material impact to the financial statements, particularly driven by rail. There is no restatement to the prior year, and the implementation of the standard has the following impact: a material increase to EBITDA with the removal of operating leases, operating profit marginally higher given the higher depreciation charge, but an element of the lease costs now recognized in financing charges, balance sheet gross up in capitalized assets resulting in a material increase in operating assets and net debt as reported. There's no impact to the underlying cash flows, as Matthew noted. However, presentationally, the lease repayments are now reflected in the financing section of the cash flow statement. At a divisional level, Rail has had the largest impact to EBITDA, given there were £842 million of right-of-use assets being capitalized at the start of the financial year, with the removal of the previously recorded operating leases now replaced by capitalized right-of-use assets that are depreciated. Student has recognized £103 million, First Bus £75 million, and Greyhound £78 million right-of-use assets, that have been capitalized on the 1st of April, with the impact to underlying EBITDA and operating profit being reflected in order that your models can be updated for future earnings reports. As noted before, the divisional analysis is provided in the appendix. On a consistent GAAP basis, the £181.3 million increase in EBITDA is largely offset by higher depreciation, resulting in a net £9 million positive impact to adjusted operating profit, with the largest impact given in rail, given the scale of the capitalized assets. As a reminder, with rail taking on the West Coast Partnership on the 8th of December, there will be a further material right-of-use asset being capitalized in the second half of around £700 million, and we will update with the full-year results announcement. Furthermore, at GWR, the right-of-use asset for that franchise is only capitalized on the assumption that it runs out on the 31st of March 2020. These positive impacts to operating profits are offset by higher finance charges of £16.3 million in the period. And given the scale and complexity of IFRS 16 on our financial results, there are more details in the appendix, as I noted before. And we will look to run a teach-in for the analysts ahead of the year-end to ensure that your forecast models that are being run are aligned with our accounting treatment. And it must be said that Faisal is particularly looking forward to running this teach-in. Turning to the underlying business performance, total group revenue improved 4.1% or £138 million on a constant currency basis. Strong improvement has been delivered in student due to both price increases and volume growth as the business continues to grow both organically and through acquisitions. These positive effects are, however, partly offset by lower operating days and higher weather impact in the period. Transit has also shown strong growth from both price increases and increased scale of total business, with net new business growth in the period. Greyhound revenues have been impacted by the closure of Western Canada in the second half of the previous financial year, with overall like-for-like revenue growth of 0.7% year-on-year. Greyhound performance will be covered further later in the presentation. First Bus like-for-like passenger revenue growth was 1.6%, with strong performance in the South businesses overall. The negative impact year-on-year reported revenue is primarily driven by the exit of Manchester, as announced in 2019 financial year. The rail business revenue growth has benefited from both underlying passenger revenue increases, with all TOCs showing progress, but also from higher subsidies at GWR reflecting the introduction of the new trains. At an adjusted operating profit level in the half year, the group has benefited by a £3.3 million gain on translation as a result of the weaker sterling, and that's expected to continue for the rest of the fiscal year, and a £9 million increase in adjusted operating profit as a result of transition to IFRS 16 I mentioned before, resulting in a baseline comparator of £104.7 million. On a consistent basis, adjusted operating profit was down £7 million year-on-year, driven by lower operating days and weather in student, and with higher pricing partially offset by higher operating and insurance costs. Transit results have been impacted by two legacy legal settlements in the period, impacting margins by about 50 basis points. Higher insurance and driver costs partially offset by the net gain on pricing and new business that I mentioned. Greyhound has had a good first quarter, benefiting from very strong immigration volumes on the long haul, particularly in the southwest. However, more recently, these immigration volumes have reduced to below 2016 levels, as well as increased competition in the northeast. The net impact of the lower fuel pricing recently has also resulted in more people using the car rather than the coach, also impacting profitability. Overall, however, the business has shown improved performance in the period versus last year, despite lower gains on property sales. First Bus has benefited in the period from improved fare pricing, improved cost efficiencies, and removal of the loss-making Manchester business. However, these benefits have been offset by increased operational costs and volume decline due mainly to the stronger summer of 2018. The business is focused on route and cost efficiencies that should show a reduction in costs in the second half, whilst at the same time materially improve overall bus profitability and margins. In rail, the strong performance in GWR continues, benefiting too from the settlement of a number of claim items in the period. Both TP and SWR remain under onerous contracts and hence do not impact the result materially in the period. There's a slight anomaly with SWR and TP on the transition to IFRS 16, but underlying, no change to the business performance and onerous contract assumptions that we previously made. Turning to the income statement, the 5.7% improvement in adjusted operating profit has been offset by higher finance charges as a result from the transition to IFRS 16, resulted in profit before tax $28.7 million, down $13.3 million year-on-year. The effective tax rate in the period does not really reflect the underlying performance, given some significant divisional changes in the period, and hence is not a read-across for the full year, where we expect the tax rate to be effectively consistent with the prior year of around 22.5%. Non-controlling interest in the half year was zero, given that SWR is an onerous contract and hence reporting zero profit. For the full year, with the West Coast partnership that starts on the 8th of December, a minority interest will be recognized relating to Trenitalia's 30% interest in the franchise profit. Adjusted EPS ends the period at 2p, down 31% year on year. Turning to the non-GAAP adjusting items in the period, amortization charges have reduced year-on-year given the full utilization of the previously recognized customer contract intangibles. And in the second half, following the Greyhound impairment, this is expected to reduce further. The Greyhound impairment and the increase in the North American insurance reserve I'll cover in the subsequent slides. The restructuring and reorganization costs relate mostly to a specific initiative to further improve efficiencies and reduce costs across our organization. This is a significant initiative that was kicked off earlier in the year and that is expected to deliver strongly in the second half of the year and beyond. In the first half, £6 million worth of savings have been delivered year to date, and the ramp-up is progressing, particularly in bus, where this is a significant underpin of our outlook for the year. With regards to the Greyhound impairment, in recent months, record low immigration volumes and high competition, particularly in the Northeast, have had a material impact on performance of Greyhound. Whilst these trends are not expected to reverse in the short term, we have evaluated the carrying value of Greyhound on a cash-generating unit basis, and this has resulted in the group recognising an impairment of £124 million in the half year to reduce the investment in the cash-generating unit to £179 million. As a reminder, Greyhound has a legacy pension arrangement in the USA, which was closed to new members in 1983 and future accrual in 2002, and an open Canadian pension scheme totaling £129 million on an accounting basis, as well as their share of the self-insurance reserve of £96 million. The sales process is well advanced, and we will update you in due course. In terms of our North American insurance reserve, the auto liability insurance environment has continued to harden in the period, including court judgments that are more punitive and that are finding increasingly in favor of the plaintiffs in certain states. As a consequence of this deterioration in the insurance environment, our actuaries have increased the estimates for the historical claim items, and we have further increased our prudence in our estimate to above the midpoint in actuarial assumptions to $588 million, with a range of roughly $490 million to $610 million. Included in this increase in reserve is $11.6 million relating to a reduction of the discount rate from 1% to 1.6% from the 2.7% in the full year 19 position. $10.1 million of this discount rate movement has been reflected in the adjusted operating profit results at a divisional level, as well as a further $5.7 million taken as an increase in the underlying insurance cost in the period. The full year impact of this higher insurance cost provision in the underlying results is estimated as an increase of about $12 million year on year. Some of this increase in insurance cost is expected to be mitigated by our improved approach to processes with regards to our subrogation claims that we've implemented in the first half. The group has a strong safety record that continues to improve, as well as a key focus on risk management. The processes around the insurance and insurance management have been strengthened as we set out in May, and the exposure and how we manage these risks have been implemented with drive to reverse this trend. Looking at the cash flow of the group, IFRS 16 does have an impact on the cash flow statement presentation, where operating lease payments have been historically been recorded as part of the operating cash flows. As a reminder, our like our operating results, our cash flows for the half year whilst in line with expectation, are also impacted by the seasonal pattern of business, particularly in student with the startup in September. In this adjusted cash flow slide, we are separating out the road business from the rail to aid in the understanding of the key cash flows impacting the group. As can be seen, we have made significant investment in the road business with around £142 million of capex in the period, with the disposal proceeds of £21 million mainly relating to the sale of Manchester business, resulting in a net road operating cash flow of £68 million. Rail operating cash outflow was £21 million in the period, including working capital outflows, where the majority of these have been funded through the franchise mechanisms. Like with the full year, more detailed analysis on the rail cash flows has been shown in the appendix. Our cash payments to pension schemes above the P&L charge were £33 million and with £68 million paid in cash interest. Exceptional item cash payments were £20 million in the first half, resulting in a free cash outflow of £75 million. £3 million was spent on the completion of an acquisition made in student in the period. The second acquisition for around £13 million closed in October, which then resulted overall for a net cash outflow of £78 million at the half year. Turning to pensions, the April 2019 triennial valuation for the bus pension scheme is progressing with the trustee, with initial indications showing an improvement in funding levels, funding levels on a technical deficit basis versus the 2016 valuation. As a reminder, the bus business, the local government pension schemes are well funded and are expected to be in surplus in both funding and accounting basis, and we are currently in discussions for the deficit repair payments to reduce going forwards. As noted before, the Greyhound pension scheme at £129 million makes up the majority of the North American pension scheme's deficit under IAS 19. Following on from the work done to date to manage our bus pension exposure, as part of the bus separation work that we have undertaken, along with our advisors, we have established a framework that we are in the process of reviewing with the trustees if there was a material change to the group's portfolio as a consequence of executing the strategy. This framework includes determining the funding level to a self-sufficiency and a flight path to get there, liability management exercises through pensioner buy-ins, where the pensioner makes up about 45% of the total liability, improvements to the liability management by providing members with more options and flexibility, like enhanced transfer value exercises, flexible retirement options, and pension increase exchanges, and de-risking the investment strategy as the funding levels improve. Subject to market conditions at the time, we believe that the framework for resolving the pension exposure to facilitate the separation of the business and execution of our strategy is currently around £360 to £400 million. Turning to the financial position of the group's balance sheet is in a strong position with a significant increase in reported net debt in the period, principally driven by IFRS 16, where £1.1 billion have been capitalized, and as noted before, it's principally in rail, where £842 million worth of right-of-use assets and related debt have been brought onto the balance sheet at the start of the period. Excluding the impact of IFRS 16 and ring-fenced cash in rail, the group's net debt has increased marginally from £1.5 billion in the prior period to £1.56 billion currently, with a net debt-to-EBITDA ratio of 1.6 times, which is consistent with the prior year and in line with our expectations. We currently have 3.8 years of committed facilities with a headroom of £497 million at the half year, with the next material debt maturity is the £350 million 8.75% bond that is repayable in April 2021. Furthermore, we continue to be rated investment grade by both S&P and Fitch, both reflecting stable outlook. So to close, our group outlook for the year before the impact of the adoption of IFRS 16 is in line with our expectations we set out in May, with the expected adjusted operating profit further enhanced as a consequence of the continued weaker sterling on translation of the North American operations and being awarded the West Coast Partnership that commences operation on the 8th of December. The full year impact of IFRS 16 is anticipated to be an increase in EBITDA of £420 to £440 million. An increase in adjusted operating profit by around £20 to £30 million, and an increase in finance costs of around £30 to £40 million, resulting in a relatively low impact to profit before tax and earnings per share in the year. We anticipate continued growth in the delivery of the cost and efficiency savings initiatives I discussed earlier, with significant improvement expected in bus relative to the first half, and improvement in student and transit offsetting some of the cost pressures that those businesses face. Overall, we expect finance costs before IFRS 16 to be flat year on year, with a slight increase in notional interest given the increase in provisions and pension balances. And we expect the effective tax rate to be in line with the prior year of around 22.5%. From a group cash flow perspective, we expect full-year net debt before the impact of IFRS 16 and excluding ring-fenced cash to be marginally below where it started. And I'll hand back to Matthew for the business review and comments on our strategic progress.
Great. Thanks, Ryan. So let me take you through the commercial and operating update for each business. As Ryan said earlier, the financial performance of First Group is heavily skewed towards the second half, and so the first half can be affected by some relatively small numbers. So starting with our largest business, First Student, you can see that we've had a strong bid season, slightly better than our expectations, at 88%. Net fleet has risen again to 43,000 buses, and we believe that we have grown our market share by virtue of winning more bids from our competitors than they won from us. This reflects positively on the quality of our business development team, as well as the high levels of customer satisfaction generated by First Student, which hit 8.75 out of 10 again this year. This high level of customer satisfaction can, in turn, lead to our customers extending their contracts rather than putting them out to bid. Whilst driver shortages continue at high levels in a number of locations, reflecting the current strength of the US economy, we're seeing price increases continuing to more than offset the cost of inflation. The school's startup has been well managed, with a lot of effort required to set up new operations, which is in the context of our high retention rate last year. And I'm also pleased to see that we've made two acquisitions in this space over the last 5 months, adding 300 buses to the fleet. The coming bid season is already upon us, and we have a higher than normal number of contracts and buses up for renewal this year, closer to 40% of the entire contract base. However, our high customer satisfaction scores should hold us in good stead for this. I won't add much to the operating profit discussion that Ryan has given you, other than to be clear that we are looking to ensure that the increased cost of insurance is included in our cost assumptions for our commercial arrangements. And I'd also comment that whilst we have seen a worsening of the outcome of claims through the deterioration of the legal environment, our safety record continues to be industry-leading. As we discussed at the full-year results, growth in student is now feasible and also profitable. As mentioned before, we see growth coming from pricing, organic growth, organic routes, and bolt-on M&A. Looking to the future, you know that we're the industry leader by far and that we've restored our margins to levels that befit that. And I see growth opportunities as follows. Organic growth continuing at around the low single-digit level. And next year, retention rates are estimated to be at least mid-80% level. And pricing will continue at levels designed to more than offset inflation as we maintain our discipline on generating the right returns. We continue to develop and grow our technological offerings to the school boards. We're having success in pitching maintenance service contracts to insourced operations. And we've also been growing the installation of our customer-focused offerings, such as our proprietary First View app, which allows parents to track the buses, as well as growing our position in the routing and scheduling services area. Finally, we're pleased to have continued on the M&A path, putting $21 million to work on acquisitions. During the period, we bought a 70-bus operation from East End Bus Lines, based on Long Island in New York. And after the half closes, we completed the acquisition of Hopewell Transportation, a 214-bus operation, which is focused on the faster-growing special educational needs sector. The M&A pipeline is growing, reflecting the fact that this marketplace is highly fragmented and localized. Finally, I'm very pleased that Paul Osland has taken over as president of First Student, moving up from the COO role. Paul has already contributed extensively to the improvement of the division, having joined in 2016, and he brings a wealth of public schools experience with him. So let's turn to transit. Transit's had a good year for contract retention at 93%, and I'm encouraged by some of the growth that we've seen from contract wins, and I'll talk more about this on the next page. Driver shortages, though, continue to affect the business, and this, alongside higher insurance costs, has impacted the profitability of the business. As Ryan commented, We've seen a couple of legal claims affecting the first half this year. However, our cost reduction program will start to offset this in the second half of the year, particularly in the area of procurement and maintenance, and we expect second half margins to improve on last year. Coming back to the commercial position, as you can see on the slide, we continue to win contracts in the traditional markets, such as a fixed route contract in Arlington, Virginia, a paratransit contract in Spokane, Washington State, and Alhambra, California, and we've also been successful in the call center area in the northeast of the U.S. More interestingly, we've won contracts for shuttle buses to serve the new TNC hub at Los Angeles Airport. We've continued our pilot of autonomous vehicles, particularly in the Houston metro area, and we've been very pleased to announce our partnership with Lyft, and this is where we're providing wheelchair-accessible vehicles for a number of large U.S. cities. In addition, the development of our mobility as a service solution continues apace, and I was at an industry customer event in the USA last month, and I was very pleased to experience firsthand a live demo of the mobility as a service app that our partner and our team had created to showcase some of our capabilities. Developments in this sector are very interesting, and I look forward to giving you an update on more opportunities when we next speak. Moving on to Greyhound. As we discussed at the year-end, the marketplace remains challenging with continued low-cost airline competition and lower gas pump prices. We did see a strong first quarter in the southern border states and the long-haul market, but this fell away in Q2 as a result of immigration controls in Mexico and other Central American countries. Competition continues at high levels in the northeast of the country, and this reduction in demand is likely to continue for at least the next quarter, and as a result, we're reducing our mileage accordingly. However, on a more positive note, as we discussed at the year-end, we've recommenced investment in our bus fleet through new and refurbished buses, and this is having a positive effect on on-time performance of the business, as well as our NPS and customer satisfaction scores. Moving on to First Bus. The business has continued to generate like-for-like revenue growth of 1.6% through improved customer offering and active network management. This has been offset, however, by the disappointing summer weather experienced versus last year, and this is an impact we've noted across the industry. Having been the first regional bus operator to implement a contactless payment solution across its entire fleet, we continue to see real progress in making our customers' lives simpler and more convenient by offering more modern payment mechanisms. Contactless and mobile app transactions now represent 45% of commercial ticket revenue, and cash now represents less than 43% of all transactions, down from nearly 80% 2 years ago. This is the first time that our digital revenue has exceeded our cash revenue, and we continue to have the highest rated mobile app of the traditional competitors in the UK. And in fact, the First Bus app is the 11th highest used and rated travel app on the App Store. We've also launched fare capping trials in Aberdeen and Doncaster to provide further simplicity and speed to the customer experience. These capping trials have the added benefit of assuring customers that they're paying the lowest fare possible. We're continuing to work hard at the cost base, and we're expecting to see the benefit of recent network rationalization, scheduling efficiency, and maintenance programs in the second half, improving margins. Our work with the local authority partners continues, prioritizing those areas where the bus travel is valued. Local partnerships supporting the clean air agenda are vital, and we progressed these well during the year, particularly in Glasgow, Leeds, Cornwall, and Bristol. We're also seeing the benefit for working on a partnership basis when it comes to tackling congestion. For example, our data analytical work with Leeds City Council highlighted specific corridors that were causing traffic hotspots, and by working together, these are now being addressed. And I'm also encouraged with the significant funding being made available by the government, with £500 million having been announced in Scotland and £220 million in England for bus prioritisation programmes. And we are seeking to participate in a number of these. One of the first outputs is the government-funded pilot in Cornwall to subsidise fares and create an enhanced network from May 2020. And this is one of our key markets. So clearly, any additional funding on promoting public transportation is welcome, recognising our part to play in the climate change and emissions agenda. And I'm very pleased to note that our decision to move forward early with clean Euro 6 buses has enabled First Group to lead the market in the provision of clean technology buses with more than any other regional bus company in the country. So there's a lot of positive activity in bus that we're playing a really active part in. So finally, let's move on to rail. The rail division has performed well this period, with like-for-like passenger revenue growth up 5% and volumes also up. This performance has been led by Great Western, which has grown by nearly 6%, TransPennine at 5% and South West Railway at 4%. And financially, this has dropped through to a profit of £49 million, driven by the strong performance on Great Western and the RFRS changes. Operating performance also continues to be strong on Great Western at more than 90%, driven by the introduction of new trains onto the network. However, we're not happy with the performance on South West Railway and TPE that have resulted from infrastructure instability and the knock-on effect of the performance of other TOCs respectively. The coming period sees significant improvements in service and fleet across a number of franchises. Great Western Railway will see the largest timetable change in a generation as we deliver the benefits of the electrification program through faster journey times and new services. 44 new trains will be introduced on the TransPennine line, and two are already in service, with the rest being phased in regularly until May 2020. And this reflects our ambition to deliver an intercity franchise for the North, and we're encouraged by the broader infrastructure improvements that could be delivered by the TransPennine route upgrade. You'll also see new fleet at Hull Trains by the end of the calendar year. We're continuing our discussions and negotiations with respect to South West Rail franchise, reflecting the infrastructure and industrial relation challenges that we face there, and we're also continuing our discussions on the potential direct award extension on Great Western Railway. And finally, we're all looking forward to starting the new West Coast partnership on the 8th of December. This is a partnership that will strengthen our rail division, and we're excited to welcome the West Coast team to First Group. So having talked about the performance of each of our divisions, let's return to the strategy. As a reminder, in May, I said we had five market-leading public transportation businesses within our portfolio. I said that we have very few tangible synergies between each of our divisions, particularly between the UK and the US. And I also said we have a number of friction costs within the existing structure which need to be resolved to deliver value. And as a result, I laid out a strategy as follows. Firstly, we focused on the future to deliver sustainable value and growth in the North American mobility market, with First Student and Transit becoming our core businesses. Secondly, I said we'd sell Greyhound. Thirdly, we'd seek structural alternatives to separate First Bus from the group. And finally, we'd continue to operate First Rail according to its terms, scrutinizing the risk and reward profile for any future commitments. So where are we with this? The Greyhound process is well advanced, running as you'd expect it to, and we look forward to updating the market when we have completed a sale. We've been working very hard to explore all the options with regard to the separation of First Bus. And Ryan's explained how our position on pensions has progressed as a result of being clear about our strategy. And this gives us a backstop on the pension liabilities connected to First Bus and helps evaluate our options. It's evident that the most likely way forward with this separation is a sale of the business, either as a whole or in three or four large, geographically aligned segments. And we've also worked through a number of the separation issues that will be involved in rationalising the portfolio. We're working very hard to deliver cost savings in the second half, and we expect the business to continue its margin improvement. And we intend to deliver this margin improvement prior to any launch of a formal sale process in 2020, so as to ensure that we capture the full potential and value in this business. And I would like to take the opportunity to reiterate that while we did complete our Manchester sales after having announced our new strategy, these were a product of the specific market position in Manchester, and they're not indicative of how we see any broader separation working. Our rail business has been strengthened by the West Coast partnership win, and we continue to manage that portfolio for value. And finally, I've talked already as to how we're generating growth in the North American contract businesses, both in student and transit. These are attractive and very valuable assets, and we're excited about their growth prospects. So as you can see, there's been a great deal of activity since announcing the strategy, and we are focused on delivering value at pace for all stakeholders. So let me conclude. Adjusted trading has been in line with expectations, and our outlook is also in line. The divisions are generating growth, and cost reduction plans are in place to improve profitability further. We're moving forward with our portfolio rationalization plans, and we're intent on realizing value for all of our shareholders and will therefore actively manage our entire portfolio by all appropriate means. And with that, let me open up to any questions that you may have. If you want to put your hands up, I think they'll bring the mics to you.
It's Joe Thomas here from HSBC. Can you just elaborate a little bit on the pensions framework? And you're saying, I think, 360 to 400 million is what you've got your eye on there, and the extent to which that is agreed with the trustees and the level of confidence that we can have about that sort of that sort of level of requirement. On the cost saving program that you identified, are these fresh cost savings that you're expecting to come through? And I'm just wondering the phasing of those cost savings and the quantum. And then finally, on the M&A program in the US, can you give a sense of whether the sort of returns you're expecting there and the sort of multiples that you're picking these businesses up on?
Sure. Well, let me cover off the cost saving and the M&A program ones, and then Brian can talk about the pension one. So on the cost saving program, look, I mean, this is a business that's taken hundreds of millions of costs out over the past 4 or 5 years, and it is a business that needs to continue taking costs out to offset the inflationary pressures that we face. You know, we've got a very high labor base within this business. So the program is designed to really get even further into the organization and tackle some of the more complicated challenging cost savings. And what we're looking at is things like, you know, putting tablets on buses in students. So we're actually automating the way that routes are designed, the way that routes are followed, you know, taking those percentages out of the time it takes to take the children to school and therefore out of the cost. We're looking at things like, you know, bus busy. We've got a huge amount of work going on in data analytics around the networks and looking at the timetables, where there's spare time, you know, the turnaround times, those kind of things. So really getting into sort of more detailed work. Now, we talked about this back in May. Clearly, we had a lot to talk about back in May, and therefore it, you know, probably didn't get quite as much airtime as it might otherwise have done. But what we're really trying to say to people is that this is a, you know, a cost-saving program that will deliver over time, you know, in excess of 100 million, but it is the kind of cost savings that we need to ordinarily generate to offset inflation. So really, it's not something that we're looking for people to bake into margin targets, other than a sort of a constant grind to improve the margin. So it's very specific to each division. Bus is the area that we definitely want to see some margin improvements coming through, and that's where we're spending a lot of time on that. On the M&A program, yeah, I mean, look, the returns, we look at that, the multiples end up being, for more traditional players in the student market, people who are just, dare I say, just running yellow buses and are just localized providers, we'd be looking to pay in the sort of 5-6 times EBITDA range. We'd be looking to make return on invested capital sort of, you know, in the sort of 10 to 15% range. It really kind of depends on the quality of the fleet that they're running and the contracts that they've got. I mean, you can't pay huge amounts of money for this stuff because the contracts aren't evergreen anymore. You might pay a little bit more than that. Where you know, what we're looking at is not just the standard yellow school bus business, but we're also looking at some of the adjacent markets, so the sort of the special educational needs sector. There are some quite interesting other businesses out there that are slightly less capital intensive, that provide, you know, real sort of some of the McKinney Vento type transportation, sort of when children are either homeless or they're out of state. So we're looking more broadly than just the standard home to school. But the reality is that the home to school marketplace, there are thousands of competitors, and there is a very good, you know, roll-up agenda for us to work through there. So with that, I'll let Ryan talk about the progress on the pensions.
Yeah, on the pensions, as you know, we've got a 2019 triennial valuation that we're currently progressing. And as I noted in the presentation, is that the funding level has improved since we last looked at this in 2016, so that's just one point. As part of the separation work, we've been able to kind of challenge ourselves a bit harder in terms of what we think that a design could be to be able to facilitate a separation, and as Matthew noted, either by sale of a single or by sale in part. And through that analysis and working with our advisors, we've come up with a framework that effectively tries to get the scheme to a level of self-sufficiency, or as the pensions regulator likes to describe it, that it's sort of a low dependency, which is really on a sort of gilt plus 25 basis points for the third members. I mean, that's sort of the enigma for most, you know, most trustees to try and achieve that. And in getting there, the framework structure includes, for example, a pension buy-in.
you know, limiting the amount of liability volatility that we've got in the future, and at the same time sort of an accelerated payment and other liability management initiatives, which would leave the scheme in a sort of a self-sufficiency position at a faster pace. Now, clearly, all of that is predicated on there being an actual sale, so it's not like we're looking to contribute £360 to £400 million to discharge the liability today, because we're going through a normal process of valuation as part of the triennial exercise with a recovery period that you would normally see for triennial exercises. So this is the framework only comes into place in the context of there being a significant portfolio rationalisation. That being said, some of these initiatives we're going to undertake anyways, like, for example, the more flexible retirement options and some of the sort of trivial commutations just to ultimately kind of manage down the liability as we kind of get there.
And the level of trustee buy-in on the framework you've identified?
So we have engaged with the trustee, but that's why I kind of raised the triennial evaluation. I mean, the first thing is let's agree that. You know, we've got the numbers back from the trustee from an actuarial perspective. We're having a bit of a dialogue with them. The funding levels have improved. The second point then is that how do we get to the sort of self-sufficiency level, and what does that mean for the trustee, and what's the right path to get there? What kind of de-risking might we well do as we kind of get to that sort of self-sufficiency level? At the end of the day, from our business perspective, the board and the business have got a fiduciary duty to put the members that have helped build this business to where we are today, and we're kind of adamant of kind of fulfilling that fiduciary duty. So, you know, back to the point of having a scheme where you've got a buy-in of the pensioners and you've got deferred members that are effectively funded up to a sort of gilt plus 25 basis points level is an ideal position for the trustee to be in, which means that whoever's then going to own the business there after that point, the pensions really is no longer a real issue from a cash flow point of view or a management perspective.
Any further questions? Up the front here, Serena.
Thanks. Damien Burr from RBC. First of all, thanks for the crispest, cleanest presentation for a long time. Much appreciated. Two questions. First of all, can you elaborate a little bit more about the processes that you're going through to make sure bids, not just school bus, but rail and others, are on an appropriately risk-adjusted basis? And internally, how are you setting the risk metrics, i.e. so we don't get into further write-downs in future on any further bids, if you can elaborate on that. And then secondly, the business, not just UK, but student, does remain relatively asset intensive. And there's clearly a risk around the residual values on assets you're buying now in 15 years' time, particularly on the traction technology. How are you thinking about mitigating and manage that risk, and if possible, deferring it elsewhere? Thank you.
Okay, well, let me cover those. So, in terms of the process around risk, I mean, they're very different, the process around risk on a rail contract, which are huge processes involving, tens if not hundreds of people, rather than the student contracts, which are much smaller and sort of much more finite. So we have, in terms of the student contracts, we set IRR targets. We're looking at least a 9.5% IRR, which we talked about in the past. We put our cost base into that to make sure that it's fully covered. And we have teams sort of working through all of that. And, you've seen us go through a period of 3 or 4 years where we've actually turned business away that couldn't meet that requirement. We're now at a position where we are getting those price rises through. And with a number of these contracts, we're getting significant increases, double-digit increases to the pricing as we renew them. So a lot of work. I mean, for the student business, there is a control mechanism that makes sure there's a very good balance between understanding the local requirements and the local competition versus making sure we keep people to essential requirements. But I think on rail, I mean, I think to some extent, we've already done the work on TransPennine and Southwestern in terms of that those bids have been done, and we're working through those. For West Coast, we talked about that very clearly. I mean, the risk mechanisms for West Coast are very different. You saw that it is a partnership. It is one that migrates over time to a management contract. It's one that has very different risk protection mechanisms in the forecast revenue mechanism. And in fact, as we talked at the time, endorsed by Keith Williams in terms of it's a partnership that meets more of his requirements. We'll hear about that when he announces the report. But clearly, the fact that he's in demonstrates that we've looked at the risk. And I think then on top of that, you're also looking at the margins as well. And you saw that when we talked about the margin for West Coast, it's a lot higher margin than we talked about for other ones. So I think, you know, we spend a lot of time looking at this. There is risk in all business, as we all know. And we've adapted our processes accordingly, and particularly the West Coast. It is one that we've spent a lot of time on, and we think we've got the right balance there. I think our Great Western one, Direct to Water, was slightly different because it was a bit more open. So I think that's less of an issue there, but you see now that's been performing. So then on the business assets, yeah, it's a good point. I mean, I think there's a different approach in the UK and in the US, and I think the UK is far further forward in terms of the demands it's making on emissions. And I think if I look by the end of the year with the buses that we've got on order, we'll have 35% of our fleet, maybe 36% of our fleet will be sort of clean air technology. And that includes, you know, new electric buses coming in, includes some of the methane or the gas buses in places like Bristol, as well as we've done very well in getting government funding for retrofitting some of the older buses up to the Euro 6 standards. So yeah, we're thinking about it very, very closely. We've also been getting involved in sort of more, I can't really talk about it this way anymore, but in old-fashioned operating leases that give us more optionality around what we do with buses at the end of their life. In the US, clearly we've got different situations. I mean, Greyhound, clearly we're looking to sell that business, so let's not really talk about that. Transit, the vast majority of the buses are provided by the authorities, but where we do provide buses ourselves, that's into sort of more sort of the university campus and the shuttle type business, where, you know, we would be sort of looking at electric buses over time. And obviously, the kind of autonomous vehicle work that we're doing gives us much more of an understanding of electric vehicles. But even in student, where we have seen less of a push for, you know, improving the emissions, which is kind of counterintuitive, really, and something that we're thinking about in terms of how we talk about the business. We've got some trials going on. We've got trials going on in Montreal. It's Montreal, and also trials coming into Rochester to put some electric vehicles in there as well. So, you know, we're moving forward with that. I mean, obviously, California, we have different rules in California, and we've got sort of gas-type buses there as well. So yeah, we're giving that a lot of thought. I think the UK is much further advanced, and we've got a lot of pressure to continue to upgrade the fleet. We're bringing leasing into the mix as well. And in the States, we're looking to get ahead of the curve, actually, because we think, you know, if we can provide an electric bus, if students are ideal for electric bus, it's short journey times, it's vehicles that go out of a lot and back into a lot, and then they can recharge during the afternoon, and then, you know, we've obviously got to work through infrastructure. I mean, all of this is very, very complicated, how you deal with infrastructure and charging all that, but it's something that, you know, we think the student market would be very good for electric buses, but we've just got to convince people that they want to pay the extra for them. Because you know, in my past life, you know, you can provide the environmentally friendly options, but ultimately people don't always choose to take them. But I think as a student, we have some real options to get ahead of the curve there.
Yeah. I mean, that's the context of a bus that's actually pretty cheap to start with. So, you know, the new technology is, as Matthew points out, is substantially more expensive. You know, how willing are the school boards to be able to pay for this new technology if they really want to? Then you'll see where the pricing goes.
Yeah.
And can I just follow up on one thing specifically? And you talked about it in the slide, but how are you to ensure that not just in the sort of the big picture, that what you're assuming on insurance is right, but that on, say, an individual state level or provincial level, you're getting the right margin for the relative risk in that area? I assume some parts of the U.S. are a bit more litigious than others.
They are.
Are you making sure that the big picture average is a reflection of maybe different levels in each state?
Yeah, the sort of joint and several liability on some of these claims. I mean, we clearly are a big corporate USA, and we can become a soft target even if we're not necessarily cause of it at all of the accident, and as a consequence of that, we are definitely taking a lot more care are full enough to ensure that if something does happen, that we can kind of cover it.
I mean, it is a balance. I mean, we're looking at that in terms of particular states who have these liability issues. We also have to reflect the competitive environment in those places as well. So we have to balance off putting it in specific bids and potentially making ourselves uncompetitive with the fact that there is a spread across the whole country.
And just to bear in mind, I mean, this is a provision that's discounted at 1.6% now, and that change in discount rates has always gone against underlying earnings. You can kind of take a view in what the medium-term trajectory of North American discount rates are going to be. I'd be amazed if we, here in 5 years' time, still talking about 1.6%. So in theory, that should reverse, and then the whole business model, in other words, should restack up, if that makes sense.
Morning, it's Alex Madison from Peel Hunt. Three quick questions for me, please. Firstly, just on the insurance, you've made a additional protection of $34 million. Could you just give a bit more color around that, why it was 34, not a different number? And is that purely additional protection, or is that because of any events or claims that have come after the period of the actual review? Secondly, clearly you've got a lot going on both in North America and in your UK businesses, but there's also a lot happening in bus and rail franchises in Europe and elsewhere in the world. Are any of those of interest to you? And then thirdly, just on First Bus, obviously you're going through a separation process. How can you ensure that that doesn't impact the operational performance, that motivation levels stay high, and that nothing drops off there?
Sure. Well, let me cover off those second two, and then Ryan will talk about the insurance. So on First Bus, you're right, it's a challenge. You know, we've put incentives in place to encourage the management to continue to deliver the operational performance. The business understands that, you know, that there is no kind of point in getting distracted by the issues that we have at the group, and it's really about delivering services on the ground. And the vast majority of our 15,000 employees in that business are focused on delivering services to the customers on the ground, and they can see if some of the improvements we had, like the contactless payments, like the mobile apps, they can see the work that we're doing on scheduling, they can see the work we're doing on the street furniture and the congestion, all those kind of things. So, but you're right, it is a challenge, and we put some incentives of program in place, as you'd expect, and we just do a lot of communication. Part of today is being clear around that we need to deliver the margin improvements before we sort of consider any sale process launch. What is great about our bus business is that absolutely all the people in that business, they love that industry. They love the fact they're providing these vital services to the public. And I think, provided we continue to communicate with people and the bus team themselves communicate well, then we'll bring people along. And I think it's interesting. I mean, the bus environment, and this isn't just a sales pitch, but there's a lot of good stuff happening around bus at the moment. There's a lot of, if the money comes through, if the authorities can work their way to really understanding the emissions agenda, they can really understand the congestion issues. There's a lot of, people are really starting to understand how important public transportation is. So that one. And in terms of the broader market, look, I come from an international business background. And in a perfect world, I would love to be in a position where we could expand and take our skills internationally. And in fact, we've been doing some of that. We've done some of that in the past. We're obviously doing that in sort of the Americas. We do a lot of work. We do work in Panama. We're sort of obviously running into Mexico, those kind of things. Clearly, our focus is on delivering value today on this strategy. But I'm absolutely not ruling out the opportunity to move into some of those areas once we've worked through these particular issues. I think it's important that we look to growth in the future.
And then on the insurance, for the full year of 2019, they were above midpoint from a valuation perspective. We had two actuaries opine on the provision, and they booked the $125 million to increase it to above the midpoint. I just kind of looked at this and thought, well, it's not a change in policy. I'd just rather be more prudent on the change of estimation. We don't end up with this sort of ridiculous volatility that we've got. Get the businesses to be pricing right, push it into the operations, make the margins, deliver. And that's the view that I've taken. So it's far more prudent than we've been in the past.
But to answer your specific question, it's not because we're sat there thinking,
we're not worried about
the additional rates to come in after the year end or anything like that. I mean, I think one of the key things that we've done of actuaries plus our sort of friends from Deloitte as well looking at this, setting out the range. You know, these are 5-6 year liabilities. These are all subject to the vagaries of the US legal system. So there isn't a number. So we've set out a range and run taken a more prudent view
of it. It is an estimate.
Yep.
You know, there's this huge database of auto insurance in the US that they all look at, and it's an estimate against that. After taking a view, I'd rather just be more prudent than otherwise.
Any other questions?
Joel Coo from Liberum. Three from me. Starting with going back to the insurance, I'm afraid. How do you think you are performing relative to the market? How much of this is a first group specific issue with regard to its claims track record? How much of it is, you know, a market wide issue? Secondly, in terms of First Bus, what are your thoughts in terms of what's happening in terms of the political environment, especially with regard to re-regulation and Manchester? What's the latest there? And finally, in rail, can you give us some visibility on how much of the onerous contract provisions have been utilised to date, or actually the other way around, how much of the onerous contract provisions are actually left on the Southwestern and Trans-Pennine, please?
Sure. Well, I'll maybe do a joint answer on the insurance one, and then I'll talk about re-regulation, and Ryan will talk about the provisions. So, I mean, I think before we talk about the specifics of how we handle it, and maybe I'll cover it all off. Look, we are a major player in the North American market. So, you know, we are bigger than a lot of people that you may be looking at. I mean, the marketplace is absolutely seeing huge settlements in motor. I think four out of ten largest legal claims of any sort were motor claims in the U.S. So we believe that, you know, this is very much a market condition, and we're operating in so many states. We're up against sort of a wide variety of judicial systems. I think the key thing I would also comment on is that our safety record, particularly in things like students, where we absolutely know, because these things are filed and available publicly, that we have the best safety record in students. So it's not a question of first group having poor safety record, or you know, in terms of, you know, the drivers, the maintenance, the collisions, injuries, those kind of things. It is not a question of that. It is really down to the insurance market. Now, Ryan will talk about this briefly. You know, a lot of things we're doing to really try and improve that we laid out back in May, and he's working through to improve the process of reducing these as much as possible.
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of just like way a simple example. For example, a vehicle comes into the shop now, the maintenance guys aren't allowed to repair that until they've actually registered with our insurance provider, so that they can actually get a claims ticket, so we can kind of pursue some subrogation. And so we expect to have a far bigger claim benefit due to the subrogation, for example, to kind of mitigate against the cost. I mean, that's just a small example of some of the things that we've identified that we've now implemented. We've restructured what the insurance team looks like. We're restructuring the contractual arrangements that we've got with our third-party providers. We're putting in a bit more sort of almost like data scientists to sort of look at cause and effect of these things and what's the fastest way to be able to address this. You know, is a settlement far better than for it just sort of bumbling along for a while and end up in the court? So there's a number of things that we are actually doing looking to actually improve this negative trend. You know, unfortunately, we've just seen sort of 8 quarters of negative trend, which has resulted in a bigger charge going to the P&L. I mean, my drive is to reverse the negative trend, which means we can have a smaller charge going through to the P&L. But as Matthew notes, there's a tightening and hardening of the auto insurance market in the U.S., and we've got to kind of do whatever we can to mitigate against it, right away from our processes at the moment that an accident happens to final settlement.
Yeah. So moving on to Manchester, I mean, well, clearly we're not exposed to that anymore as such, or, you know, we are potentially in Oldham, but in Manchester we're not operating. I think the comments around the re-regulation are the same. I mean, the Manchester Mayor is working through his process, and there's consultation to be happening sort of right now. I think the mathematics still sort of stacks up. We know how much of a subsidy is required in London to deliver the bus service in London, and how much everybody's paying, and it's sort of £70-80 a person for that bus service, and they're paying something like £17 per person in the region. So I think the mathematics is going to be a struggle. They have to demonstrate that it is financially viable. I mean, we're obviously less concerned about Manchester. We're not seeing anybody else finally, just on the rail talk, the factually good deals
yeah.
on rail.
Yeah, Gerald, on the on the basis that we recognise the full onerous contract provision for SWR, there's clearly a franchise that's more challenging for us in the shortish term, where we are utilising that provision, relative pace. And it will probably exhaust at some point during the course of the next fiscal year. For TPE, the performance actually has been better for 6 months than what we actually set out for the budget, marginally better. It's not to say that we aren't going to be using the provision during the course of this year, but the performance is actually better than what we originally assumed. And we remain firm that we think that the onerous contract will be recognised, whilst it's not the full contingent capital exposure that we've got. We still believe that that's still appropriate to maintain it at the current level. I mean, subsequent to the full year, we've actually repaid some of the additional funding commitments. So we kind of contingent capital actually has gone down. And by the time we get to the end of the year, we expect it to go down by another $5 million. So in terms of the capital at risk, is actually reduced year on year by the time we get to the full year. But the SWR is the one that is the most challenging, and hence we fully provided for it when we booked it earlier for the full year 19. In the next fiscal year, yeah. I mean, we're still in negotiation.
Well, I think you're getting a very accountant argument here, and, which is quite right. It's an interesting balance. On TPE, we came and said the PCS is far too high. It's a ridiculous number, which means obviously it would take longer to burn through. On South Israel, the PCS was lower, and our exposure was lower. I mean, in terms of the actual sort of the cash we put in, I think we put around sort of $45 million in this year. But the reality is that we are having very detailed conversations and discussions and negotiations with the DfT to resolve these issues. The key fact on South Israel, these issues are not down to First Group. We have had issues. Clearly, there are issues on our side as always with franchises. But the reality of this is that we are the infrastructure is aging. It's going into bottlenecks of sort of really really tight congested bottlenecks. And we've got these industrial relation issues that, whilst we are getting some amelioration for that, that is just not conducive to a functioning and growing railway. And the DfT understand that. So we're having detailed conversations with them. We expect to be able to deal with that. Ron's quite right. There is always a risk that, this may not be resolved. And we're not going to spend any more than the PCS. But, our focus right now is on negotiating with the DfT to find a resolution to this quickly. Because the biggest challenge on South Israel is just getting the performance better. And Rachel and Ryan are both customers of this franchise, and it's just not good enough. And between us, the Network Rail, and all the stakeholders, we have to get it working better. I don't think it's unavoidable, but I think if we, they are two very different conversations. We have to manage through this SWR process because, again, we don't believe that the issues on that franchise really are truly down to the bid that we put in. We have been unable to deliver the improvements we wanted because of the infrastructure issues and the IR issues. And Great Western sort of dealt with it as a separate stream and will be dealt with and has been dealt with, as a separate issue. I mean, the challenges on SWR have been known for at least 12 to 18 months, and at the same time, the government put out the tender for the extension of Zurich Award. So we're talking to the people, we're talking to the whole of the people in the department, and they all know what's sort of going on. So I don't think it's a question of, well, we need to get one sorted before the other. We need to get both sorted quickly. Great. Well, look, unless there's any other questions, I think we'll call a halt there. And thank you very much for coming today. Really appreciate it. Thank you very much for coming today. Really appreciate it.